Tonight on Hops and Box Office Flops, technically this podcast doesn't exist, but if it did, it'd be comprised of the top IPAs and pilsners from the top brewers in the world, the Alpha Beers. When all else fails to get you buzzed, we don't.
Hops and Box Office Flops. A place where we can celebrate the underdog films, the bombs, the disasters, the much maligned movies that have drowned in their infamy. So please sit back, grab a beer, and enjoy the show.
Hello and welcome back. This is the 232nd episode of Hops and Box Office Flops. We are the internet's premier podcast for bad movies and mostly good beer. Tonight, we continue our look at live-action flops, i.e. movies adapted from popular cartoons or toys, with G.I. Joe, The Rise of Cobra.
Call me Commander.
I am your Yo-Jo host with the most, the Thunderous Wizard, and along with me for this battle against international terrorism are the man whose colon survives all the Taco Bell he eats solely through the restorative power of nanomites, Chumpzilla.
I was once a man.
Wrong movie, but better movie. And we've also got the man whose great Scottish uncle was smelted to death, Bling Blake.
I'm going to make you very unhappy. Oh, wait, you're always unhappy.
I mean, that is true. I am always unhappy.
I, so much complaining. One, do not like the clean cut. Bling Blake, this is uncomfortable.
I'm not clean cut. I have a beard.
I mean, he might as well be Duke
clean
now.
Cleaner cut. It's gross.
Hoorah, Blake.
Boogaloo
Blake. So points for you can find the show on Instagram, Facebook, Threads, and Twitter at Hops and BO Flops. The Rise of Cobra is free to stream on Paramount Plus. I, of course, own this semi-enjoyable turd, of which I think is aged rather nicely. It's like a cheap bum wine. Let it sit for a couple years. I liked it a lot this time.
Yes, it is the Boone's Farm of movies. Awesome.
So let's talk beer. Tonight we are drinking Weird Science Pale Ale from Paperback Brewing Co. It is a West Coast hoppy pilsner that clocks in at a Captain Cash disapproved 5.6% ABV. I chose it basically because the can art was especially appropriate for this film, as a mad scientist is doing all sorts of mad scientist-y things. This movie revolves heavily around that, even though most of it is not Dr. Mindbender, weirdly enough. But we will get there. I would say, based on my limited, you know, four-pack of this beer, I am enjoying it a lot, and I would give it three bad movies. It's a light pilsner, very flavorful pilsner. So, yeah. And the can art, sick. All their beers have cool can art, if you can run across them.
The can art is nice. And cheers, T-Dubs. I wish I could enjoy it with you. The closest I could get to that beer was Tucson, which is pretty far from anywhere in Georgia.
It's not close, but you could have come and seen me. So, you know,
maybe
that's what a good friend would do. Yo, Joe.
And I am not.
Yes. I was there recently and it's overrated.
Not overrated. Thing.
Okay.
Not overrated. Rise of Cobra was directed by Stephen Sommers of The Mummy fame. He also directed cult favorite Deep Rising and one of our favorite personal punching bags in our college years, Van Helsing. But Van Helsing, I don't want to go to Transylvania. This movie was essentially the nail in the coffin of his directing career. He did one other film with Anton Yelchin called Odd Thomas. And then he hasn't done a whole lot else, which is odd because... Odd.
Odd Thomas?
This movie,
because they gave it a sequel.
This movie's entertaining. It made okay money, but it's on here for a reason. And The Mummy movie is like revered and is getting like a special re-release for its 25th anniversary. People love The Mummy.
And to be clear, we're talking about the OG Mummy with
Brendan Fraser.
And Rachel Weisz. And
yes,
that is in fact a good and fun movie.
Oh, I thought we were talking about the Bela Lugosi one.
But no, Tom Cruise.
Blake with a deep, deep cut.
For all your monster
fans.
He did The Mummy too, right? I know he was obviously
he was Wolfman,
Dracula,
right?
But
or was Lon Chaney Wolfman? The Wolfman?
Lon Chaney was Wolfman.
Lon Chaney, yeah.
I thought Bela Lugosi also did. Did I could be wrong on that
though. He'll rip your lungs out, Jim.
I don't know. We'd have to look that up. Honestly, I'm not overly familiar
but seriously, Rachel Weisz, Brendan Fraser, The Mummy. That's a legit
good adventure movie.
Good fun. Yeah. And you know what? You see elements of that in this film. Like, he's not a bad director. It's a fun movie at times.
Yeah. I think
it's a little uneven, but he's not. Is probably not the problem.
The problem with this movie, and we'll get to it more so in our lingering questions, but also obviously pop up in the plot of this film, is that it kind of uses very complex jujitsu to twist the origins and overall lore of G.I. Joe, which is not a great idea. But anyways, this movie stars Channing Magic Mike Tatum as Duke, Sienna Kvetch Miller as Baroness. If you haven't seen her recent turn on Curb Your Enthusiasm, where she's converting to Judaism, season 12 of Curb has been amazing. I'm very afraid of life without Larry David for me. I need that show in my life. You've got Marlon Robin Wayans as Ripcord, Adelaide, Mr. Echo Akunue of Agbaje as Heavy Duty, Christopher Malaketh Eccleston as the dude who becomes Destro, Joseph Don John Gordon Levitt as the dude who becomes Cobra Commander, Ray Darth Maul Park as Lips Snake Eyes. Yes, he has lips.
Just wildly why?
It's a very strange decision.
Weird choice. And that's fucking Darth Maul.
Yep. You've got Lee 80s T-1000 Byung Hun as Storm Shadow, as well as a couple of Summer's frequent collaborators, Arnold Pick Vosloo and Kevin Lord of Illusions J. O'Connor. Oh, and we get a super cool appearance from Brendan Fraser as Sergeant Stone. I love that guy. So this movie is appearing on this pod for one or two basic reasons. Mainly, it's not an out-and-out flop, but it only hauled in $302.5 million worldwide on a budget of $175. If you love G.I. Joe, such as I do, that budget is absurd to me. That's G.I. Joe doesn't need a budget of that size. Not when you can make, say, The Creator, which I talked about on this pod, for $80 million. Yeah. This movie doesn't need $175 million budget. It's not Transformers.
So here's where I will... I guess second guess your comment there, T-Dubs. I think the problem this movie has is that the Joes themselves don't need a $100 million plus dollar budget for a movie. But to get the bad guys incorporated, because they're bad guys, were so weird sci-fi.
Yeah, that's true. I mean,
it's kind of like I think the budget accidentally caters to the bad guys. And that maybe is where the film gets a bit lost. But that's just my opinion.
Cobra always had the cooler stuff, man.
Yeah.
They were always like the weird alien sci-fi tech dudes, right? Yeah. So anyway.
But didn't Dune 2 cost $175 million? And that is 15 years after this?
I only watched half of it on Twitter, but it looked awesome.
It just seems high. It does. I think if this movie would have stuck way more closely to its source material, it would have gotten better repeat business than it did. That aside,
I think if they just put Cobra Commander in the hood and had him be the bad guy off the flip, and there were bats involved right off the bat, yes,
that would have helped. And we're gonna get there because there's some plot things in here that are just so dumb. But this movie did get a sequel. The sequel is worse than this somehow. I don't like the sequel at all, even though the costumes are a little bit cooler. And I do like this movie.
To your point, though, this movie did just good enough to get a sequel.
Yeah, and the critics hated this.
It wasn't terrible, but it did get a sequel. Fair.
So the critics hated this. It's a 33% on Rotten Tomatoes with 169 reviews. It had a Metascore of 32. The users also hated it. Again, that's the problem. If you're trying to appeal to the G.I. Joe fandom as well as a broader audience, a 50% just isn't going to cut it. But before we get into the plot, and you'll see why this probably jaded some of those longtime Joe's fans such as myself, what is your one-sentence description for Rise of Cobra? Bling Blake.
A multinational force of spec op badasses with crazy tech goes up against a private army of super soldiers led by the Wish.com version of Justin Hammer from Iron Man 2. Sam Rockwell is God.
That's good. Chumpzilla.
G.I. Joe, knowing is half the battle, and this movie is okay.
Yeah, I would just say everything you loved about G.I. Joe, this movie uses about 50% of it, and then manufactures the other 50% to cater to an audience that was never going to like this movie in the first place. I.e., let's have a romantic subplot. Duke of the Baroness must have dated in the past. Why not? In fact, she's a totally different woman.
If your first crush wasn't Lady J or the Baroness, I don't want to talk.
All right. Now, I'm just going to do this now because obviously the Baroness and Duke is in the sequel, but he dies immediately because he's like, get me the fuck out of here. He called his agent. He didn't want anything to do with it.
I think that's, was it a coma? Did he succumb to a coma?
No, they actually killed him. But the Baroness was clearly going to become Lady J, right? That's where they were going.
Sure.
I think that's where they're going. They literally just took like a whole bunch of random shit. They're like, we'll just take her and turn her into her because she used to date him. But let's do the IMDb one real quick, and then we'll do the plot. We'll talk about some of these ridiculous changes they made to G.I. Joe. IMDb says, an elite military unit comprised of special operatives known as G.I. Joe, operating out of the pit, takes on an evil organization led by a notorious arms dealer. Sort of, but this movie's full of bad twists and turns that you can see from a mile away, because here comes the film. In 1641 Scotland, one of the clan McCullen is punished very severely by the Scottish king, or probably the British king, right? For dealing arms to both sides. Turns out, his long, long, long distant relative is now making weapons for NATO. These weapons are full of nanomites. Essentially, they can eat and destroy everything around them until they're deactivated. It's a nuclear bomb that lays waste to mostly just what you want it to lay waste to. It's full of tiny little robots that eat stuff like termites. So he's finished with his prototypes. He's got to deliver them. And Duke, who's in the army at the time, is on the case. He and Ripcord are part of a team that are going to deliver these nanomite warheads. Dun, dun, dun. Their convoy is attacked in the middle of their delivery by a strange and highly weaponized force. They're in trouble, guys. The warheads are going to get stolen. But then some guys show up to save the day. There's a masked ninja, a redhead, Mr. Echo, and another guy wearing a thing that he always wears throughout the movie for no fucking reason.
It's his little Google Glass.
But he's always wearing it.
His attack helicopter, heads up display over one eye. He's very, he's very advanced.
Airwolf.
And during this attack, Duke realizes that the woman leading the attack is a woman he used to know.
What?
Anna. They used to date and stuff. Now she's got different colored hair, though, which makes her almost unrecognizable, especially for my wife, who didn't think it was the same person.
To be fair, didn't we all go through a second puberty once we caught one of the Baroness?
Maybe.
Chumpy.
So.
I know. Captain Cash did. That awoke something in him.
With the aid of G.I. Joe, they're able to save the nanomite nukes and deliver them to the Pit, which is a base that G.I. Joe uses somewhere
in Jeremy Piven's original hairline, the Pit, right?
In a remote part of Egypt.
Okay.
Now, no. McCullen calls General Hawk to say, hey, you got my warheads? He's like, I got them. We turned off the tracking device. Cleverly, though, McCullen's like, let me look at that. Let me take a look. Let me take a look, see. Put this code in, turns the tracking device back on. Yes, McCullen, just like his awful acting distant relative, is also dealing arms to both sides. Who could have predicted that shit? Anybody who watched the fucking god-awful opening scene, that's who.
Everybody knew it. Yeah. The second he was speaking on camera, you're like, oh, he's the bad guy. Cool.
Mind blown. Why do they have the scene in 1641 Scotland in there? It's so dumb.
Like it's because it's, so it's obviously to like it's because the only callback to it is the end, right? When he becomes Destro, and that's it.
But
that's the whole
he holds that mask up later and says like they put this on my da 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 because he got caught dealing arms to both sides. That's the golden rule of arms dealing is don't get caught dealing arms to both sides. And they called him Destro, Destroyer of Worlds.
There you go.
So it's like, you don't need that scene. That scene is
awful. Might as well have been like they call him Cobra and he's going to rise.
True. So now that Destro has re-engaged the tracking beacon, you discover that he's working with the Baroness as well as Storm Shadow, the best character in the movie and my favorite G.I. Joe bad guy. And they've got to get the case back. Of course, they know where the Pit is. They show up, they wreck shit, they get the case. Things look bleak because General Hawk gets stabbed. Cover Girl gets stabbed through the chest by Zartan, who, by the way, part of the plot here is Zartan is eventually, with the help of nanomite technology, going to change his look so he can become president of the United States. That comes later. Now they've got the case, and they've got to test it so they can show the world what they're up against because some terrorist stole the case. By the way, he's only dealing arms to both sides, so NATO will fund this project to begin with. Although, whatever. Anyways, as this all begins to unfold, Duke reveals, hey, I know that girl. We used to date and stuff. And then we get a bunch of flashbacks. You get the Snake Eyes and Storm Shadow flashbacks. So how are they connected? Well, Snake Eyes was essentially Aladdin in Tokyo, Japan, stumbles into a dojo one night. Storm Shadow attacks him. They hate each other. Da-da-da-da.
I'm sorry, can we talk about the Storm Shadow kid? Because he's a badass, and he's Flaming Dragon from Tropic Thunder.
He's Flaming Dragon, yeah.
Yeah, Flaming Dragon, that's what it is. He's awesome.
He's super tough. Those kids are tough. And
those kids are badass.
Now, again, like I don't mind the flashbacks in making narrative sense of all the things that are happening here, aside from the McCullen one, which is just stupid. It's the Storm Shadow Snake Eyes stuff. Fine. That's pretty much G.I. Joe appropriate. Love it. It's everything they do with the Baroness Duke and Anna's brother Rex, who is on a reconnaissance mission in Afghanistan with Duke. She's like, hey, you got to bring my baby brother back. He's the only family I've got. They've just gotten engaged. And of course, Rex seemingly dies due to a premature airstrike as he's getting this information from the bunker. Other shit happens.
Seems a little overwrought. Yeah.
I premature airstrike Mrs. Bling not too long ago, and go over well.
Yeah. We don't need to talk about that, I don't think.
Sorry, in-laws.
Yeah.
Woof.
So again, they're going to Paris. They're going to set off this nanomite warhead. I think this
they
is
didn't
the
know
coolest,
kitchen staff, Hoss.
I think this is the coolest scene in the movie. If Charlie Wax were here, no way the warhead gets shot off. Zero chance. But they use the accelerator suits they've teased from earlier in the movie. There's a really cool chase through the streets of Paris. Snake Eyes is on top of cars. He's under cars.
Hold on. I'm not going to deny that the chase through Paris was cool, but like, but you're pro accelerator suit? CGI scene.
They don't look particularly good, but I like the rest of the scene.
Yeah, I mean, the car chase bit is cool, and the on top of cars and the fighting, all that's neat. But yeah, the accelerator suits, I was like,
they're pretty rough.
I'd rather have them on like motorbikes or something. I mean, yeah,
very gimmicky, it feels.
It let him do stuff in a chase scene that you couldn't otherwise do. So I guess that part is neat. But yeah, I thought I was not super impressed.
Listen, what do they accelerate? They accelerate you. And the viewers' heart rate, because they're going to be on the edge of their seats. Oh,
that's some elite level marketing there, T-Dubs. Kudos.
You're gonna pay for the entire chair, but you're only gonna use the edge.
Yeah, exactly. So eventually they shoot off the nanomite warhead. It eats quite a bit of Paris, including the Eiffel Tower, but they capture Duke, who's able to disengage the nanomites, and they bring him back to their secret base underneath the polar ice caps. Now, all this stuff, like the pit, the base under the polar ice caps, I love all this shit. This is typical G.I. Joe shit. What we find out, though, is Rex, who died in this apparent airstrike, did not die. He found Dr. Mindbender in there working on all this shit for McCullen, aka future Destro. And he's so enamored with this technology, he decides, I don't want to take this and use it for good. I just want to be evil as fuck.
Right away, like quick. Off the fastest bat. Heel turn, like... WWE wouldn't have the balls to pull that off.
What's the point of using these for the good of man when I can build weapons and create brain dead soldiers and also basically turn my wife into Destro's sex slave?
No, sister. Sister.
Basically turn my sister into Destro's sex slave. And
it was crazy. Like, if they had done it in reverse, where like they called in the airstrike. And, you know, he dies he gets all disfigured because of it. And then Dr. Mindbender saves him and convinces him that, you know, like his government doesn't care about it. Like, but he was like, oh, that's dope. No. I'm evil.
No,
like, good guy on the way in the door.
I need this tech.
30 seconds later, he's like, I'll kill my fucking mom. I'm in.
All I can say is that, at least in like the toys and the comics, that Dr. Mindbender's outfit was pretty much in line with like a leather daddy. So I'm just saying he might have had some sway with folks.
But here's the thing. So the guy from The Mummy, the annoying guy, Kevin J. O'Connor, he's Dr. Mindbender as a very pretty much stereotypical like Baxter Stockman type. And then this doctor who's doing all these experiments and creating all these like Viper soldiers, basically who don't feel fear. They don't ask questions. They recuperate because they've got the nanomite technology. That's Joseph Gordon-Levitt, who's disfigured. He's wearing this god-awful wig and the monocle of Dr. Mindbender.
Mm.
So it's sort of like a pointless twist to be like, nope, just some guy named Rex. What?
Right. Yeah. Dr. Rex. Like, he's the doctor the entire time. So, yeah, it was weird. I guess, like, you're supposed to think that he was Mindbender the whole time. And then you get the weird flashback. But it wasn't a very good reveal. Like, it wasn't...
No.
I don't know. The shitty thing at all
is they don't use his voice the entire movie. He's a very good actor. He does some decent physical acting. But of all the costumes in the movie, outside of Snake Eyes' lips, his is by far the worst.
It's bad. And it's supposed to be, we're supposed to not have any idea that it's Joseph Gordon-Levitt the entire time. I get it.
Except by the time he shows up, you're like, well, who else could he be? There's nobody else in the goddamn movie.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Pentor.
Anyways, well, their whole plan.
Because they go to the trouble giving everybody's backstory except for him.
Rex. Yeah.
Yeah.
So their whole plan is they've got three nuclear warheads. They're going to set off in Moscow. Shanghai,
Beijing,
and DC. And once this happens, basically they're going to turn to the most powerful person in the world, that being the United States president, who will be sitting safe in his bunker, except guess who's waiting for him? Zartan, played by the great Arnold Vosloo, who's great in this too. And he essentially turns into Jonathan Pryce, who we also love on this pod, but
what an amazing actor.
They, of course, are
so foiled. Funny seeing him in this.
G.I. Joe saves the day. Ripcord learns Celtic. And
why not?
Why the hell not?
Yeah, sure.
Why? Why not? Well, why wouldn't they have that as the thing? Another one of the really bad parts of the movie.
I like how he just wants to be in the Air Force and then suddenly can fly the most highest tech jet.
A jet he's on Earth. Never seen.
Never seen.
Never seen that before. Yep.
Have you gone through flight training? Like, no, but I aced the entrance exam.
Guys, don't worry about this. I can do this.
That's like that kind of great movie.
Yeah. It's like doing great on the MCATs and then performing brain surgery the next day and just crushing it.
And bringing in some junior mints to a surgical procedure. So they save the day. Hooray. Ripcord.
Hold on. Wait. You skipped the most insane thing about this entire movie. Like, changing the G.I. Joe lore, okay, I get why you'd be upset with that. I get it. But here's my main problem. When shit started to go south on at the under the sea base, the big plan was, hey, it's going bad, blow the ice caps, and then suddenly ice starts raining from the sky. Ice doesn't sink. You can make it as small as you want. You can break it into as many pieces as you want. Ice doesn't sink. That's the only reason why the Earth works. If all the ice, you understand this? Like, you can't.
It's one of the reasons the world works.
Listen, I left out the part where the Baroness, who's only called the Baroness because she married some schlub who's a baron, and who can also arm the warheads, because that's their only plan for arming these things.
Armed my warheads.
Also, you don't just get a warhead and say weaponize it. That's not what weaponizing means. Not how any of this works.
She begins to remember Duke, right? Like, so she's oh, I used to love this guy. Oh my god,
love conquers nanobites.
And McCullen looks at fake Dr. Mindbender, future Cobra Commander, and goes, you said this wouldn't happen. My sex slave is remembering things.
What?
It's like, holy shit. So her brother is essentially like the guy who used to manage the Moonlight Bunny Ranch.
That's right. He's now her pimp.
Yeah, like, what is happening? So she's goes to the hospital. They're like, hey, man, she's got a lot of nanomites in there, man. We don't know, but
she's sick with these things.
We'll get them out of there. It's not like hepatitis or C. We can get rid of these. No problem. Yeah. Cobra Commander does, Joseph Gordon-Levitt does become Cobra Commander before they get caught. He injects Destro with some nanomite solution that gives him a metal face. And then he puts on a mask, breathes like Darth Vader, and goes, call me Commander. And they immediately get captured and put in a super high-tech laser prison.
Hey, speaking of flashbacks, can we talk about why didn't we get the flashback where Duke gets demoted from major to captain?
Oh, where he gets in the bar fight?
No, so when the movie begins and he's doing this thing, he introduces himself as Captain Duke or whatever.
Yeah.
And then they flash back to the party, the wedding scene, whatever it is, and he's wearing major shoulder boards.
Oh, I think that's just incorrect. Because he's supposed to get demoted after he gets in the fight the first time he's recruited to G.I. Joe. Oh, so maybe that did happen before.
Yeah, we just didn't
I assumed it happened after his relationship fizzled with Anna, because he was like kind of out, you know, like, oh, my life sucks, man. I lost a super hot girlfriend and Rex is dead. Man, it sucks. And I've got to hang out with Ripcord every day.
I just have to point out, like, that's not like a super important part of G.I. Joe lore, is to have those guys like be down and out.
Falcon does fill that role in the cartoon.
Sure. It's just a weird beat though to have like, oh, he has to have like some sort of like, I guess what I would call external conflict.
Well, but that's the point of like tying all these people together. But we'll talk about that in our lingering questions, because there the movie ends. And actually, I think this is one of the better sequel teases ever, is that you realize the president is now
Zartan.
Zartan, and he does the whistle. He's been doing it throughout the movie, and it's like, holy shit, this is great. I can't wait to see where this goes next. And then the sequel basically deletes half of it.
That's the bar you set. Really? Yeah. Okay.
I love that sequel tease. Yeah, honestly, sure. So
yeah, it was good.
As we get into our beer rankings, because for me, this is three enjoyment beers, one pain beer. I've been looking at Twitter a lot, and all of a sudden there was this like
huge
little pushback of, hey, why was Stephen Sommers put in director jail after this movie? This movie's great. And I'm like, you know what? I'm excited to rewatch this. And then I rewatched it. I'm like, these action scenes are good. It's got humor that works mostly. The cast is great. I enjoy this movie. I can accept its faults because it's not the first time I've seen it. I don't get hung up on some of the changes they've made it anymore.
It's a G.I. Joe movie, man. Like,
and it feels like a G.I. Joe movie.
Yeah.
But this is no worse than a lot of the Marvel shit we've been fed over the years. And it's got a good sequel tease. And that worked for Marvel forever.
You're only saying these things because Captain Cash isn't here to fight.
No, but it's
you.
True. Like, this movie should not have had a sequel that deleted everything this did. There wasn't that much bad here that they're like, all right, fuck it. Like, we'll just not get Duke. We'll just let him go. We'll kill him off. Sure, he doesn't want to be here. And if you watch the second movie, Duke and The Rock are the only two things that work about the movie.
I'll give you this, T-Dubs. As far as a live-action G.I. Joe movie goes, this, not half bad. And I agree, it should have continued on. But not my cup of tea, though, man. As far as beer rankings go, I'm going to give this 3 pain. It's just
savage.
Yeah, it's watchable, but I found myself not enjoying it as much as I should have and wishing I was watching the cartoon movie because that was way more rad. Because, again, I was once a man.
All right. Well, before I kick to the bling blink, I'll say I was never as big of Transformers fan.
No.
I like the G.I. Joe cartoon movie way more.
Same.
I would watch this 1,000 times before any Transformers movie. But, well, Rise of the Beast was fun, and Bumblebee was fun. But the rest of those movies are awful. I like this movie way better than those movies.
And, I like the those first movies, Transformers. I thought that was fine.
Yeah, but then I'd say the first one, sure.
I like both the animated movies. I like them both.
But like
the live action ones, not a fan.
Why did those hit so hard and this did not? Like, those movies were making billions.
Oh, yeah. To your point, do I think this is wildly off the mark from the Bayformers? No. This is literally the quality equivalent of the Bayform movies for the G.I. Joe franchise. Why this didn't hit the same way, I don't know, man. You're right.
Charming, young cast, attractive cast. Don't get it. Bling Blake, how many beers?
Yeah, it wasn't terrible.
I followed you, T Dubs. I'm right there at 3 enjoyment, 1 pain. I really liked it. Channing Tatum is interesting in the sense that, like, he kind of delivers his lines the same way every time. Mark Wahlberg is kind of guilty of this, too.
He's been a lot better since this movie.
Yeah,
you can tell he wasn't, like, obviously he didn't want to do the sequel because that's why they killed him off immediately. He had no interest in doing that, and he did it just because he was contractually obligated to. But you also feel like he didn't want to be in this one either.
Didn't feel like it at all. Did not feel like he wanted to be here.
And I love Channing, but he really is the weak point in the acting part of this movie.
Between him and Chris Hemsworth, like, who else has gotten, like, shortchanged the most by their early career decisions?
You know, the thing is, I don't think that this was a bad decision for him. I think it's right up his alley. Well, it's just that he's good at delivering lines as Duke. Like,
between this and, like, Magic Mike, like, he should have had a career, but I feel like he's, like, pigeonholed.
I think he's had a good career.
Yeah, yeah.
Honestly, Channing's doing great.
You look at him from here to the movie with Sandra Bullock, where he's like the bumbling.
It's like the Fabio Romancing the Stone remake. Yeah.
And he's a million times more charismatic by then than he is here. And that's just a part of being very early in his acting career.
But he
really probably not.
Also,
being ready to star in a movie.
Maybe? I feel like he could have been a bigger star, though. I feel like it just
he didn't
come into the right time, kind of thing.
He has a very similar delivery to his lines, where they kind of all sound like they're coming from the same guy, and regardless of the character that he's playing,
they run together a little bit, yeah.
And unfortunately, that hits really well when you're kind of the bumbling cop in 21 Jump Street, or the kind of the bumbling action guy in the whatever that Sandra Bullock one was. And it works great in Magic Mike, because you're just kind of a dumb heartthrob who's also a good artist, because rom-coms love that. Unfortunately, it does not work as the commander of an elite special forces unit and then the hotshot guy that joins G.I. Joe. Like, it just doesn't hit right.
Doesn't translate.
And he wasn't going to change anything up because it's Channing Tatum.
I will say this, and this movie is 10 years too late for Brad Pitt. Yes. And it's 20 years too late for Tom Cruise or Val Kilmer to play Duke.
Mm-hmm.
And they would, all three of those are just
better. Much better. Yeah.
Kilmer would have killed it.
Oh, man.
All right.
Tom Cruise would have killed it.
Yeah. Let's head to our first break. When we come back, we've got some lingering questions about the rise of Cobra. We'll see you on the other side. Hello, and welcome back to the 232nd episode of Hops and Box Office Flops. We are talking G.I. Joe, The Rise of Cobra, the 2009 G.I. Joe movie.
Ooh, wrong movie.
Attempted to set up a franchise and failed. Our first question is, does this movie do the property justice? We kind of discussed this during the plot. It's a tale of two films. Yes and no. Does it feel like a G.I. Joe movie? Yes. Does it take too many liberties with the property? Yes.
Yeah. You know, I think it's this really tight rope you have to walk, because you're obviously taking a fairly unbelievable cartoon and making it into a live action world where it has to be somewhat realistic. And I think they did a good job of making it G.I. Joe, but also real enough to be the real world. I think the problem is, to your question about does it do it justice, is they change too much of the G.I. Joe lore in that process. And it kind of like, you could have left some things a question mark. You didn't need to explain.
It muddies everything. The waters. This movie takes exposition to the extreme. And some of that is better left unsaid for maybe a sequel. Because even the second movie does a lot of the Snake Eyes shit. So you could have left all that for the second movie.
But hell, you could have left it all for Snake Eyes.
The less said, the better. I mean, for fuck's sake, this is 1,000 times better than that shit.
No shit.
Oh, God, that movie. Good Christ.
It's a very complicated and deep lore. I think that's probably the biggest issue the movie has, is like it touches on it, but it never like fully fleshes out any one of the points it flirts with.
I think
it's in the backstories of the G.I. Joe characters and how well they are developed in the comics and the TV show is incredible. Like, there's a lot of people with very, very elaborate backstories, you know, all their hometowns.
And to your point, the comics in the 80s fleshed out way more stuff than even the cartoon gave us then. So there's like a ton of resource material to call on here. Yeah. I think the movie tickles what should have been more of a deep dive into that stuff.
I think, you know, you've got a universe that big. It's the first movie. Sure. You have to take a universe and you have to shrink it. But what they did was they tried to take a universe and not only shrink it, but then interconnect it in all these places that sell to a wider mainstream audience. Like, of course these two have to know each other, and this guy should be related to them too. That's not what this needs. Like, you don't make a World War II movie back. Turns out Hitler was FDR's cousin. No.
Right. It's unnecessary.
He's just an evil sack of shit. Wait, we root against him.
Tell me more.
Yeah,
interesting.
We don't need Cobra Commander or the Doctor's motivations.
No.
And again, the thing is, they still don't really give us the motivation.
No,
it's like,
they go through the process of
showing us here's why he's Cobra Commander, but turns out he was just lured by the dark side as soon as it was presented to him.
You didn't
have to do any of that, and it didn't get you anywhere.
Okay, so let's get to that. Second question is, of the changes they made to classic G.I. Joe lore, which was the dumbest? It's got to be the triangle offense of Rex, Anna, and Duke, and tying these three integral characters together. Now, the Destro stuff, I really didn't like. I hated that.
But
the triangle effect, the Triforce of Dumb.
The Destro stuff didn't matter in the end, right?
Does anybody else have a problem that
it's sort of an afterthought?
It looked like shit. That didn't help. So, they turned his great, 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 great uncle into Leonardo DiCaprio, the man in the Iron Mask.
It's a good movie. I for one, like John Malkovich as Athos. I think he does a good job.
What do you think, Blake?
So I don't know the lore enough to go on a super deep dive on this. And maybe just because I cut my hair and I look like I should be attending rallies for a certain presidential candidate. Does anybody else care that it went from being a real American hero to a real NATO hero?
No, does it matter? G.I. Joe is supposed to be a global peacekeeping force.
No, he's a real American hero.
It's the same reason I don't give a shit about truth, justice, and the American way.
It's fine. It was an honest question. I didn't know. I thought it was fine, but I was also like,
I don't care.
We have non-Americans in G.I. Joe? Is that a thing?
Because G.I. Joe's historically have been a toy that are very jingoistic. So, yeah, who cares? More fun question is best action scene of the movie. And I think you know, Blake, despite your naysaying, I'm going with the accelerator suits.
Accelerator suits through
Paris. It's mostly the car chase.
It's definitely the best scene in the movie, and I also hate it the most.
Also, the pit is a very close second. That felt the most like the G.I. Joe cartoon to me. Cobra finding G.I. Joe's secret base, using the mole, the mole drills. They drill in. I love that
cool
scene.
Cool things.
Yeah, you get the first...
The pit was fun with everybody training. You're like, that's totally G.I. Joe.
The montage. Dude, the montage legit.
Yeah.
Plus you get Brendan Fraser.
Upside down rope propelling.
Yeah.
Brendan Fraser is he was great. Not the best action scene, but he was amazing.
No, but I do love him. Like, you're going to need that helmet, son.
Yeah. He was great. I didn't realize until today that it was the same director. So that makes sense why he showed up. I was like, why is he here?
Yeah. That was just like,
that's
hey,
why.
Yeah. I'll be here.
What about the Snake Eyes Storm Shadow final fight?
I like that some of that stuff too. I think by that point though, I'm so annoyed with some of the dumb shit they've done. And of course,
even when Storm Shadow did the Ray Park,
that was awesome. And of course,
homage.
The big mistake is they don't hint to you that he's also nanomite infused, because he makes it back for the second movie, and again he's the best part of the second movie. But like some sort of hint, give us a hint that he'll be back too. Because I remember,
I was really
disappointed. Like, oh shit, they killed Storm Shadow. Because all the other guys, they're like getting up and shit, and they're like, oh, you can't hurt these dudes. But he's like got these cuts across him, like just one, like you see like a little glimmer of it, like repairing itself would have been cool.
Like the dirt on Superman's grave, just a little.
Yeah, I'd take that. I mean, that scene's legit. Him killing him, like you can see it through those puckered lips that he's conflicted. He shouldn't have done that.
The lips, they're so bad.
So number four is we've had two live action G.I. Joe movies. There's a third seemingly coming because it was teased at the end of Transformers Rise of the Beast. If you haven't seen that movie, and I really enjoy that movie, they have a little G.I. Joe tease at the end.
Old Man Snake.
But what G.I. Joe character that has yet to appear? Like, I guess there's been three G.I. Joe live action movies. I don't count the Snake Eyes debacle. But of what character yet to appear would you like to see the most in a live action G.I. Joe movie?
Mm.
And the answer is Serpentor, by the way. But feel free to say what you'd like.
Itty bitty ditty bag.
Also a great answer. Sergeant Slaughter would be awesome. The twins would be awesome. Tomax and Samat.
And I want Beachhead and Gung Ho, because I always loved them when I was a kid. Yeah.
Alley Viper.
Alley Viper would be cool. Bats would be cool.
Bats would be super cool. Bats are probably the most underused possible character in any adaptation of the G.I. Joe franchise at this point. Like, they're literally like robot Ken fodder. What?
Yeah.
Why aren't those in the movie?
I honestly
and believe it's a cool design too.
They look very cool. I believe if you could build to the Cobra Law stuff, a live action Nemesis Enforcer and a live action Globulus would also be incredible. But for me, Serpentor, just like, do Arise, Serpentor, Arise. Make that your three movie arc. Actually, you could do that in two movies. Then you get to Cobra Line.
Yeah.
I don't care. The Serpentor arc is so fucking cool.
Dude,
and I'd love to see it.
I was looking at a BuzzFeed article today about, you know, things that pop culture gets wrong about the 80s. And one of the things that people were talking about was like, nobody remembers like just being bored, because TV during the day, like, was just all soap operas and talk shows. Until, you know, Gilligan's Island reruns started in the afternoon.
It's really like taking a toll on, like, I can see it in my kids. They have no imagination. Like, I would play G.I. Joe for hours. And they're I would create scenarios. I'd have them fight this, I'd have them fight that. And they're like, you do that for hours? I'm like, that's what we had to do. That's what I would do.
I was just thinking about sick days, you know, like my kids are going to be home tomorrow for the solar eclipse. And thinking about sick days and man, I only had the 30 VHS tapes that we had in our little drawer situation. And so I watched the G.I. Joe cartoon daily. I loved that movie. I watched it a ton.
It fucking rocked.
That reminds me, some guy tweeted out about the 90 Ninja Turtle movie. And
yeah.
Like, and how nostalgic that feels. And it's like,
that was one that I actually had the actual, like,
yeah.
We bought it from Suncoast.
You know what feels nostalgic to me though is when I would put that VHS in and that Pizza Hut commercial would hit with the little kid in right field looking at like the sky.
Yeah, and the dandelions.
I play right field. It's important, you know. You got to know how to catch. You got to know how to throw. I love it. Anyways.
Same thing with the Pepsi Tom Gun commercial is up there for me as well.
Yeah. All right. We're going to take our second break. And when we come back, we've got the Vow of Silence trivia challenge. We'll see you on the flip side. Hello, and welcome back to our G.I. Joe, The Rise of Cobra pod. It is our 232nd episode, and we are on the Vow of Silence trivia challenge. Gentlemen, tonight we have a standard 5-question multiple choice format quiz, and you will be playing for Cobra Commander's awful wig from his pre-Commander days.
Gross.
Yeah, you can wear that all you want with its burnt flesh and all. Your chime-ins are, they accept those in crayon, or a kung fu grip, or haystack in a coal mine, or of course any of the pod standards.
What about a swivel bicep?
That lifelike hair. All right, number one. The G.I. Joe toy line had been around for decades by the time of this movie's release. Despite that, the Rise of Cobra tie-in toys were the first to feature this G.I. Joe staple. Is it A, the Pit Mobile Headquarters? Is it B, the Hiss? Is it C, the Night Raven? Or is it D, the Cobra Battle Barge?
Farce and
a Kung Fu Grip.
A.
That's Chumpzilla. It is the Pit Mobile headquarters. The master of 80s toys knows it all. You are correct. It is 1-0, Chumpzilla.
Yes!
As soon as toys was the subject, I knew I had lost the question.
Despite being court-martialed by critics, The Rise of Cobra did win a Teen Choice Award. Which category did it win for? Is it A, action movie? Is it B, movie actress? Is it C, movie actor? Or D, movie villain? Those are really distinct categories at the Teen Choice Awards.
And a Kung Fu grip?
Bling Blake.
Action movie?
No. Come on, Bling. Think about who stars in this movie. Think about what teenagers like.
I guess what it's Channing.
What are my answers again?
Channing Tatum, the chick, or Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
So is it Channing Tatum?
Yes, it is. Of course, it's Channing Tatum.
Yes, that's my answer. Yeah,
like those are your real options.
So it's 2-0, Chumpzilla. I thought that one was very obvious. We're on to number 3. With the positives always come the negatives. Mm. Rise of Cobra also received 6 Razzie nominations, including Worst Director,
ouch,
Worst Screenplay, Worst Prequel, Remake, Ripoff, or Sequel, which it won, and Worst Supporting Actor and Actress. Which of these other categories did it win? So it won Worst Prequel, Remake, Ripoff, or Sequel. Which of the other categories did it win? Is it A, Worst Picture? Is it B, Worst Screenplay? Is it C, Worst Supporting Actor for Marlon Wayans? Or is it D, Worst Supporting Actress for Sienna Miller?
I'm going to shoot.
Bling Blake.
Screenplay?
Incorrect.
Sienna Miller.
She won. She was the winner.
Really? That's not fair. She wasn't the worst part of this movie. It wasn't her fault.
You've already.
She was bad, though.
You've already lost the wig in the first 3 questions.
And my competitor is in shambles over here, just mopping the floor with me.
I am barely a man. I was once a man.
All right, but all right, number 4. See if you can at least sort of,
salvage something.
Yeah.
A little bit of pride.
So, number 4 is what toppled it for worst picture at that year's Razzies?
Oh no.
Is it A, Old Dogs, which is the god awful Robin Williams, John Travolta film? Is it B, Transformers?
Is that the biker movie?
Isn't Tim Allen in that too?
That's Wild Hogs, guys.
Come on. That's Wild Hogs. Sorry, yeah.
Holy shit, there's more than one.
I had the same movie in my head, Chumpzilla. Yeah. It's okay.
Is it B, Transformers, Revenge of the Fallen? Is it C, Land of the Lost? Or is it D, All About Steve?
I don't even remember that movie.
Sandra Bullock's obsessed with a news reporter. It's not good.
It's the Avengers, the Transformers movie. That's the one.
I mean, you didn't buzz in, but because I'm aiming for the clean sweep, you're correct.
It's the worst. Yeah, it's the worst.
What?
Yeah.
Wow, I didn't think that was going to be it.
All right, so for the clean sweep, number 5. This movie inspired the Funny or Die sketch, The Ballad of G.I. Joe. Which of these comedic actors did not, I repeat, did not appear in that sketch?
Ooh.
Is it A, Billy Crudup as Zartan? Is it B, Vinnie Jones as Destro? Is it C, Julianne Moore as Scarlet? Or is it D, John C. Reilly as Bazooka?
Billy Crudup.
I'm going to shoot.
Well, because you didn't buzz in, Chumpzilla, I'm giving it to Bling Blake.
Do I guess what he guessed or do I guess the right answer?
Guess what I guess.
I'm going to go Julianne Moore as Scarlet.
Incorrect.
Really?
It's Billy Crudup.
It also incorrect. It was John C. Reilly as Bazooka.
I thought for sure he was going to be, because he's such a good relationship with those guys, even at least back then. Now, Will Ferrell. I guess he and Will Ferrell get along. They just don't. Will Ferrell hates Adam McKay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But is Will Ferrell the drummer for the Red Hot Chili Peppers?
No, it's Rage Against the Machine, but close enough.
It is the Chili Peppers too, I thought.
Yeah.
No, it's what's his name from the it's not Chili Peppers.
Chili Peppa.
Chili Peppa.
So, Chubzilla, you almost had the clean sweep. But if you get this bonus point, I'll count it as the clean sweep because okay. In that video, Cobra Commander is listening to a vinyl of which 70s band?
Blue Oyster Cult.
Incorrect.
Damn.
Just because I want Bling Blake to get a point. Jeremiah was a bullfrog.
A little Credence?
No, Three Dog Night.
Oh, the Three Dog Night. God damn it. Three Dog Night.
I gave it to you.
God so, damn, bro.
For nothing, not even a fragment of the wig for Bling Blake, but we're on. I don't want that dirty,
burnt hair wig.
But since you don't want the wig, but
I'm so sorry, bro. I am so sorry, brother. Sorry.
But at least give us a good recommendation, and not your barber.
Hey, this is a different barber than the one that gave me the Prince Valiant haircut that one time.
How many tiki torches did you get with that haircut?
All of them.
This one came with a Let's Go Brandon flag. So, God, is this a good recommendation? I don't know. Now the pressure's on me. I caught ISS on an airplane the other day. And that's the International Space Station.
No, that's movie. In School Suspension, as I recall.
In School Suspension. Yeah, ISS. It's basically it supposes a nuclear war between the U.S. and Russia happens. And then the scientists aboard the International Space Station have conflicting orders to take over the ISS from the other country. Look, I need to pay for it right now. So my recommendation is that you wait until it's free to stream. But when it does, I think it's worth the 90 minutes, 2 hours, whatever. It
got decent reviews. Not great.
It's okay. It's not amazing. But it's right up our alley. I think you guys would enjoy it. So check that out. Of course, there are new episodes of Ghosts out right now, so you can get in on that.
Don't bring your old ass shit here.
And
you're like an octogenarian with your CBS recommendations.
I love CBS sitcoms. They do a good job. And then you guys, I think, kind of shit on this last week, 2 weeks ago. I watched Roadhouse this week with Gyllenhaal, and I liked it.
You like everything.
I do like everything, but I really enjoyed it, and I thought it was fun.
For a handsome guy, he has zero of the sizzle that Patrick Swayze had.
I mean, that's fair.
Zero.
But Swayze basically had all the sizzle.
Like he like basically had a corner on the market of sizzle. Sure, yeah.
Yeah.
But Jesus, at least had a little bit.
And I know Chumpy didn't like this one, but Wish just dropped on Disney Plus, so my girls have watched it about 17 times already.
Gross.
You talking about the Skilo song?
Yes, the Skilo song. No, the little star movie with Chris Pine, the good Chris.
You talking about the horror movie about the guy who grants wishes, then kills
you? You mean Wishmaster?
Yeah.
When you're in prison?
I would like my lawyer to go fuck himself. I could do that. Anyway, Chumpzilla, what do you have for us?
It's been a long time coming, but I managed to snag a 1984 Marvel Secret Wars Constrictor on card. I've got that. That's my recommendation. If you are a collector, T-Dubs, sorry for being a dork, but I appreciate it, and I'll catch you guys on the flip side.
My recommendations for this week are twofold. I saw Godzilla X Kong. It was very stupid, stupider than Godzilla versus Kong, but also a lot of goddamn monster fun. There's a vertical suplex in there, which was great. I had a great time. It is predominantly a King Kong movie, which I also love because King Kong is very close to my heart. So it's a legit monster beat 'em up. So check it out. My second recommendation is, because I love King Kong, I decided to revisit Peter Jackson's 2005 film, which I've had a very complicated relationship with because of some of the changes it made to the original film, in terms of the way they portray Carl Denham, what they did with Captain Englehorn, what they did with Jack Driscoll, just the sheer amount of CGI, which I understand in a movie like that, of course, it's going to require CGI. And my relationship remains very complicated with that film. Now, that said, one of the things I love about Peter Jackson's King Kong is that it is a much more so a love story than the original 1933 film. In that, Ann Darrow, in this case played by Naomi Watts, really feels for Kong. Kong is not just a monster she's trying to get away from. They have a relationship. She loves him, and she wants what's best for him. And when they take him from Skull Island, she's upset. And when they have this moment in the park late in the movie, it's just a really emotional thing. And it nails that. So when you can ignore some of the other shit that it does just so wrong, and just the fact that it insists upon throwing just ghastly CGI thing after CGI thing at you, because some of it looks great, some of it looks awful. The dinosaur stampede, for example, through this little narrow corridor, just looks unfinished. But I watched the director's cut as well, which has a couple additional scenes, and there's one in the swamp that I think is actually a lot better than that dinosaur stampede. So check it out. I don't know. It's a very long movie, which is also part of the problem. It's the director's cut is 3 hours and like 15 minutes. But I love King Kong, and I'm not going to say I'll watch it more regularly, but I'll definitely not wait as long as I waited to go back to it this time. I do think there's a lot to be appreciated about it. So those are my two recommendations. Remember, you can find the show on Facebook, Threads, Twitter, and Instagram at Hops and Beale Flops. You can find myself on Twitter at WriterTLK. Captain Cash is CaptCash on most social media. Chumpzilla can be found at Chumpzilla8 on Twitter. McCheese, he's lost to the nanomites. They ate him. They ate his face.
God love you, man. Sorry.
R.I.P.
McCheese eating nanobites.
Yeah, sucks. They're like McGriddles. Targeted. They'll kill you one day. Could be sooner, could be later. And Bling Blake can be found on Twitter at Bling Blake or on Threads at HBOF Bling Blake. If you enjoy the show, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts and be sure to like, share, and subscribe. And connect with us on social media to share ideas for future episodes. In the end, listeners, remember one thing. You don't ask to be part of G.I. Joe. You get asked. We'll see you next week for the third entry in our live-action flop series, a movie that the internet really loved and I really did not love, Alita Battle Angel.
I think it's cool they let Dick Vermeil be in charge of G.I. Joe.